Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 2 of the Curly Mustache Podcast, where each week we take one real life villain and one fictional villain, break them down, talk about their histories, what they did, how they did it, and any connections they may have with one another, and whether or not they're redeemable with our trusty bowler hat scale. I'm Steven.
And I'm just a simple Wisconsin boy here to show you fine folks how I like to put my penis in a dried out vagina. I'm your friend and everyone else's, Joel Mingle.
You can't just change shitty accents every week. Like, you can't.
Yes?
No, we're done.
I am an actor. All right? This is my heart and soul. You cannot...
You're not an actor.
Have you seen my life? I am not crying at the despair I should be feeling. That makes me the Robert Downey Jr. of our fucking group of friends.
So you're the cocaine addict of our friends.
I don't fucking know what you're fucking talking about.
All right, so to start things off, I just...
But I'm fucking ready to go! Let's do this!
Stop yelling at me. All right, so firstly, I just want to thank everyone that took the time to listen to our first episode. Share us on social media, subscribe when you left feedback and stuff. The response was fucking awesome. It was amazing. And we can't wait to bring you more awesome shit. With that being said, let's go ahead and get started. This week, we'll be talking about the man who would rather use your hand as a glove than shake it, Ed Gein, as well as the quintessential mama's boy and motel master, Norman Bates. And Joel, who do you want to talk about first? Because we have a shitload to say.
Oh, we have to talk about the granddaddy, the maestro of creepy murders, the butcher of Plainfield. We're talking about Ed Gein, baby.
Ah, yes, Ed Gein, or as I would have called him in high school, Geeny the Weenie. Actually, I wouldn't have otherwise. I guess my balls would have been hanging from his fucking ceiling fan or something.
No, you would have been just fine. This is the sad thing about poor Ed. Had he just avoided the murder part, he could have been the prettiest little girl to sashay his way around Plainfield in 1940s.
Yeah, I guess. Prettiest. No, we're not going to go there.
Ed wanted to be a woman, damn it.
That's true.
I'm going to say it. I'm taking a stance right here and right now. Ed was sick and he just wanted to be a girl thinking it would make his life all better.
Yeah, I think maybe he got to that point, but we'll get into it. Let's talk about him a little bit.
I'm sorry, I'm burying the lead. I'm jumping ahead. My apologies. I'm so fucking excited and the cocaine is not helping.
So, Ed Gein, born 1906, died 1984, of course called the Butcher of Plainfield, as you said, Joel, from Plainfield, Wisconsin. His biggest evil deeds were, of course, the murders that he actually confessed to. Of course, there could have been more, but the two that he confessed to, Mary Hogan in 1954, who was a tavern owner in Plainfield, as well as Bernice Warden in 1957, who owned a hardware store in Plainfield.
Have you ever read anything by Harold Schechter? He is a fantastic true crime author.
No.
He did a book called Deviant about Ed Gein, and how he described Plainfield. The way he described Plainfield was, I can only read it in a dramatic voice, but it was just, I can only say it like that, but it's just very much like, Plainfield, Wisconsin, the cold, dead heart of Wisconsin.
Anybody's dream vacation, by the way. Also probably very reminiscent of the hometowns of many of our listeners that, you know, are from the Midwest. Basically, southern Indiana and Kentucky are the cold, dead heart of the country, so...
No, just the way it sounds, it really strikes me that our tiny little podunk towns are probably a thriving metropolis in comparison to where poor Eddie, our boy Eddie, was coming from.
Yeah. On top of him murdering the shit out of two women, he also was a rampant grave robber. This guy exhumed corpses from local graveyards. He admitted to around 40 visits to steal different body parts on different nights, and basically took people's dead body parts and fashioned them into trophies, jewelry, accessories, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, you know, our audience is probably like, what the fuck? Because I know I love this kind of shit, but when I did a deep dive into good old Eddie... And I mean, I really did the research. I constantly had to stop, put whatever I'm reading down, and just look at myself in the mirror and be like, How the fuck did this happen in the 1940s?
It's some disturbing shit. Well, it wasn't the 40s. It was the 1950s.
But here's the thing. Like, Ed Gein was the perfect soup of psychopathy.
Oh, yeah.
Did you read about his mother?
Well, yeah, and also important, his father was a crazy alcoholic and abusive, whose mother hated, but also his mother was a religious nut on Carrie's mom levels of religious nut.
I think Carrie's mom was this is proto Carrie's mom.
Yeah, probably.
Like, this is where Carrie's mom got her fucking drew her inspiration from.
Yeah.
With this woman, because it's cuckoo for fucking Cocoa Puffs, this broad.
She basically told her sons that all women were sinners, they were prostitutes. I mean, all women except her were prostitutes and tools of the devil, of course.
And that the women of Plainsfield, those vicious, plain, homely-looking whores of Plainfield, were the reason that the world was going to end soon.
Mm-hmm.
What the shit?
So, obviously, with a addict father and an emotionally abusive father, emotionally abusive mother, not only did he have the hereditary tools of being a psychopath, but he also had the environmental tools of being a psychopath, too. So it's like, well, not only do I have these shitty genes, but I'm also going to be raised in this shitty environment.
And he had the extra, the little icing on top when it comes to psychopaths, serial killers, is head trauma at a very young age, frontal brain damage due to, you got the shit beat out of him. Like, he hit the front of his head. So that is, I mean, you've got, like, Dahmer, Bundy, Kaczynski, all these guys.
He did have a brother, Henry, who was also treated like shit, and surprised that he also wasn't a psychopath. But after his father died, and I think before his mother died, there was a fire at their farm.
Yes!
And his brother, Henry, died of asphyxiation from smoke inhalation. But when they found his brother's body, his head was all dented in. So there's a lot of speculation that Ed just beat his brother unconscious and then just left him there to breathe in the smoke unconscious, and then he died. But of course that wasn't proven.
He went to the cops during the fire because they were trying to, the thing was is that they were trying to put a fire out in the field outside their farm, and Ed came running back going, my brother's missing, he's in the fire, I don't know where he is. And they were like, Ed, where do you think he might be?
This exact spot.
And he goes, oh, well, I'm not sure, but let's go this way. And he was like,
why is he Scottish?
No, that's not Scottish. That's more Wisconsin Canadian.
That was Scottish. You sounded Scottish.
Oh, don't you know he's over there? I'm not saying that I put him there. God, that is a...
You have to stop this. That's why you have to stop.
Nope, it's going to keep going. I am dedicated to my craft.
All right.
And he took him directly to them. He's like, I don't know where he is. And then he literally walked them straight to it. No walking to the left, to the right. Like, oh, he might be over here. No, to them. They're like, Eddie, how'd you know where he is? Oh, well, I'm not sure. That was his exact words. Oh, well, I'm not sure. And he fucking got away with it.
Yeah, he did it. He totally did it. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that he caved his brother's head in.
I want to give our beautiful audience an idea of what it was like for Ed. Imagine, if you will, a home with no running water, no electricity, and your mother will sit in a rocking chair. Your mother, big, giant, huge, box-like woman with a hairy upper lip who believes that her vagina is of the devil and should only be made for procreating, and she wanted you, let's pretend you're Ed, to be a girl. Yeah, did we all mention that? She dressed Eddie up as a girl for the first 3 years of his life because he came out a disappointment. That was her exact words. They would sit like little kids at her mother's feet while she would read her favorite chapter in Proverbs about the whores and how you should run from them and run unto the Lord. And then she would tell them that they should never have sex, that they should masturbate, and she would give them instructions on how to masturbate. Now, they are 33 when she is doing this. Ed was 33 fucking years old.
Yeah,
he had been doing this for the first 33 years of his life. Oh no, Ed! Grip it harder! Yank it! There you go! You'll love your mother and none of these whores. Jerk it for mommy.
Why are you still doing the Scottish accent?
You need to just let it go. This is my process.
No, I'm not going to let
this
it go.
This is my process.
It's an entire other accent. Get better.
I love the fact that I just did a reenactment of Ed Gein's mother instructing her child how to masturbate, and your big deal is possibly reminiscent of Scottish people.
Listen, man, I'm a stickler for accuracy, okay?
I'm sorry.
Let's talk about after his mom dies, because that's when the shit really hit the fan. After his father died of alcoholism, I believe he had heart failure from the alcoholism, his mother died 5 years later, and that's when, like, Ed just totally fucking lost it. His brother was dead at this point. He boarded up the rooms. He boarded up his mother's room. He boarded up his brother's room. And he started deep diving into books about cannibalism, books about death cults, headhunting, Nazi stories, and honestly studied Grey's Anatomy, not the TV show, but...
How to save a life, where did I go from? I'm sorry, you say Grey's Anatomy and I gotta sing that fucking song. I'm sorry.
Grey's Anatomy was a very popular book in the 1950s, the descriptive and surgical anatomy of the human body. And
written by Dr. Elmore McSteamy. I'm going to let that joke sink in for the female audience members. Now, the thing about Ed is that a lot of people don't talk about is for 3 years after his mom died, yeah, he went into this, he went off the rails, but this was when Ed's schizophrenia really began to kick in. He told the doctors after his capture that he would stay inside for weeks on end because there were vultures in the trees and they were dripping blood from their beaks, and he would look in the leaves outside and they would be his mother's face, and his mother would be laughing at him, telling him what a failure he is. So, and you know, he boarded up her room because he didn't want to fuck up her room like you had said. But just imagine, you know, you're already cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, right? And now you're having your first psychotic break, and there are vultures like a Tex Avery cartoon in the corner, and your mom's face in the ground going, Ed! Kill for me, Ed! Kill for me!
And this is, like I said, this is when shit really started hitting the fan, and this is when the graveyard robbery started, like we said earlier, 40 visits to graveyards to steal different body parts. And I have a whole list of shit to explain to our audience. But first, I just want to get to the murders, because Ed Gein is a really popular criminal, very popular serial killer, but as far as anybody knows, he only killed two people. I mean, he probably killed more than that. There's a lot of speculation, missing persons, you know, there's a lot of victims' families that are like, I think he did it. She went missing around this time. The two main murders that we have to talk about are Mary Hogan, who's the tavern owner, which, you know, of course, her body was not found until well after she was murdered. And then Bernice Warden, who was the hardware store owner and the reason that Ed was actually caught. Because he went to the hardware store one night and, you know, of course, Ed Gein is not really thinking clearly at this point in his life. But he's talking to the hardware store owner. There's some patrons in the back. And he's like, okay, well, I'm coming back tomorrow morning to pick up this antifreeze. And that's that. And so he leaves, and they leave, and sure enough, old Ed came back the next morning to not only get his antifreeze and pay for it, but then he decided to murder Bernice Warden and drag her body off to his farm, which, of course, the patrons that heard him say he was coming back in the morning, along with his receipt that said he bought antifreeze, led the authorities to his house to find Bernice Warden's body in his fucking shed with her head cut off. She was hung upside down by her ankles and wrists. Her torso was field dressed like a fucking deer, and she was shot by a .22 rifle. Like, what? Unless the shot came first, I feel like that doesn't even fucking matter.
I'm gonna have to do a little slight correction on you there. He talked to Bernice Worden's son the day...
He was a deputy.
No!
I thought he was a sheriff or a deputy.
He was just a local guy who was going... Ed was like, so, tomorrow is hunting season? Yeah, it's the first day of the season. So you're gonna be out all day? Yeah, I'm gonna be gone all day. And your mom's gonna be here all by herself. That's how the conversation went. Like, this dumb fuck didn't think... No, like, I'm getting a little too excited. I have to try in a little bit. But no, he literally had a 5-minute conversation asking...
Her son was actually the deputy sheriff, Frank Worden. So he literally told that to a police officer.
Oh, yeah, he was. My bad.
So he literally told all this stuff to the cop. I thought that he was in the store when all this happened, but maybe he just told him on the way out the store. I mean, it's a small town. Who the fuck really knows exactly how it went down? So, yeah, as we said, like, her fucking mutilated body was found in his shed. But let's talk about the list of things that the authorities found in Ed's house, shall we?
Whole human bones and fragments, wastebasket made of human skin covered chairs, skulls on the bedposts, female skulls with tops sawed off, bowls made from skulls, a corset made from a female torso, leggings made from skin, masks made from a female head, Mary Hogan's face in a paper bag, Mary Hogan's skull in a box, Warden's head in a burlap sack, Warden's heart in a plastic bag by the stove, 9 vulvas in a shoebox, a female nipple belt, 4 noses, a human lips on the window drawstring, fingernails and female fingers, and on top of that, 15 female vaginas, ranging from women from 47 to the age of 15.
I feel like we could make a 12 Days of Christmas song with all of these.
On the first day of Edmas, my true love gave to me Mary Hogan's face in a paper bag.
Yes.
The fun part is reading about the interviews with Ed and him talking about how he would actually complain about, like, making the bowls out of the top of human skulls. He'd be like, well, you have no idea how hard it is to really just properly saw the top of the head off there. And you don't get that much in there as much as you think you would.
The pina scalata is a very, like, hard...
The pina scalata!
Hard drink to make.
That's...
I gotta credit Futurama on that. That's not me.
That is a Jeffrey Dahmer drink, if I've ever heard one.
I know that was, with us fucking around, that was a hard list to really focus on, but several things we mentioned there, especially like the corset made from a female torso, leggings made from skin, a woman's face as a mask, like these were all things that Ed was putting together to make a woman suit to turn himself into his mother, essentially. He wanted to become his mother.
Yeah! Eddie would run around in the dark of his house. Again, his house has no electricity. So if you can imagine this emaciated-looking creature from nightmares, like, well, I've got my female leggings and the lady corset, and, oh, look, a dried vagina I'm going to put my penis through, and a female mask. And he would talk about...
So I thought he said that he did not have sex with any of the dead parts because they were too smelly or whatever.
First off, I call bullshit on that. I call bullshit on that. I'm going to say it now.
I might have robbed vaginas from graves, but I did not have sex with
them. Oh, okay, the Gein defense. My bad. Sorry.
I feel like if you're going to admit to one, like, why wouldn't you admit to the other at that point? Like, come on.
Because he's an uncared for schizophrenic.
All right, that's fair.
But no, he would put his penis, like, through the vagina that he cut off. He cut off the front of the vagina. Like a reverse fleshlight.
Like a gummy peach ring.
Like a gummy peach ring. Baby, give me a piece of your gummy peach ring.
That's disgusting. But I'm for it. I'm good with that. Let's talk about, like, possibly the most fucked up thing about all of this. And that was...
There's a most fucked up part. There's a most fucked up part.
There is. The most fucked up thing is that he wasn't found guilty. He was found not guilty by insanity. Are you shitting me?
He's not found guilty because the sheriff beat the shit out of him. He beat the ever-loving fuck out of Ed.
Yeah, he smashed his fucking face into a brick wall during questioning. To be fair, he did it because he was close with one of the victims. The deputy sheriff was the second victim's son. So I believe one of the other deputies is the one that smashed his face into the wall. I'm sure that was like, you know, it'd be like if some guy murdered my mom or something and my best friend had to question that guy or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it was the sheriff. Everyone in Plainfield at the time said that Ed Gein killed the sheriff because right after the trial, he had a massive heart attack and died because he realized I basically let Ed Gein go because he beat. Oh, this story is amazing.
To clarify it a little bit, letting him go just meant spending the rest of his life in a fucking insane asylum.
And he was fucking happy about it.
Right.
Interviews with him, he would talk about how they're like, Ed, are you happy? Well, they take good care of me. I'm happy. I'm very happy here. He's a serial killer and nipple belt maker who got to live out the rest of his life as happy as a pig in shit.
I gotta say, the nipple belt is probably my favorite accessory out of all of these.
I keep thinking of the Steve Martin comedy routine where he talks about, like, you go to Vegas for the first time and you see, you know, strippers. And it's like, I saw 57 titties! 57 titties! And I could just imagine Ed Gein being like, oh, 57 titties. Oh, imagine the belts I could make with that.
Do you think that the nipple belt is sized like a normal belt and the amount of nipples is actually like your waist size? Like, oh, I'm a size 43 nipple belt.
Oh, 40.
So it's got, a 40. It's got 43 nipples.
No, 43 waist. Oh, good heavens. You're going to need at least 74 nipples for that one if... as the crow flies.
We're starting to get to the end of Ed Gein.
And it makes me sad. It makes me sad. I kind of want this to be the end of the... I want to spend the entire episode talking about Ed Gein. Because we are overlooking so much. So much.
Do you have anything else you want to say about Ed Gein before we get to his death?
No, I... Just go on. Just go on.
He fucking died in the mental hospital of lung cancer at age 77. So he actually lived a pretty long life being happy. Which is just bonkers to me. It's fucking bonkers.
It pisses me off, and at the same time, it gives me hope.
What, that you can make nipple belts and get away with it? Is that what you're saying?
That I could get nipple belts and have a happy long life? Sure, not quite, but now that you say it out loud, that's...
Well, now that I'm thinking about it.
Huh. Now I'm thinking about it. I could cut all the titties off. We'll talk about this off the air.
And of course, you know, he went on to inspire some, like, insanely popular horror icons in literature and movies. The second person that we're talking about is Norman Bates, and we'll get to that inspiration or whether there was inspiration here in a minute. But truly, he did go on to inspire Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise, as well as Hannibal Lecter / Buffalo Bill from the Silence of the Lambs franchise.
I love, now that I've done more research about Ed, the scene from Silence of the Lambs with Buffalo Bill. Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me. Now, I just imagine an emaciated Wisconsin guy from the 50s going, well, would you go steady with me? I'd go steady with me. I'm a pretty girl now. I tore my arm skin. Hey, how big is your mother there, Steven? Just out of curiosity.
Honestly, I think that Buffalo Bill is probably the closest vision in pop culture of Ed Gein. You know, a lot of people, I think Hannibal Lecter, of course, you know, the eating people part, because they don't even really know whether or not Ed Gein was actually eating people. He was wearing their faces like Leatherface, but the only, like, speculation they have about the eating is that they found the heart near the stove, like it was getting ready to be prepared.
Yeah, I don't. I see.
Well, and he made fucking bowls out of people's heads. I forgot about that part.
You beat me to it. But yeah, I was going to say, you know, he made cooking accoutrements out of, you know, human skulls.
Yeah, so I guess that's true. But Hannibal, I think, was just a little too classy. Leatherface was a little too, I think, like, aggressively killing, whereas Buffalo Bill was...
aggressively killing. I was going to say murderous doy-doy.
Right. But Buffalo Bill was more of like a secret serial killer that dressed like a woman out of skin and, you know, had all those great things about him.
My skin's so nice because I wear put the lotion on it. Wow, Bill, I never thought of that. I'm telling you, Ed, that's the best thing you can do for it. Hey, Ed, would you fuck me? Well, I don't know. Would you take me out to dinner? Only if you'd fuck me, I'd fuck me hard.
Stop painting this picture in my head. I hate it.
And then just, I could just see them looking at each other longingly, both of them with their dicks hanging through a cutout vagina, and the music, kiss me out on the milky twilight.
Ed Gein just reaches up with somebody else's hand and caresses his face.
Yes! 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 We have a $1 million deal here. We need to write this fucking book.
Are you ready to move on?
No, but yes.
Okay, so before we get started with Norman Bates, I think you had something you wanted to say about Spring-Heeled Jack Coffee, Joel?
Hi there. I'm Joel Mingle, co-host of the Curly Mustache Podcast, and when I find myself researching into the wee hours of the morning, bringing you the finest content pertaining to the worst parts of humanity and pop culture so you can ooze it into your sexy, sexy ear holes, I'm gonna need something to keep me going. And let me tell you, that something is Spring-Heeled Jack Coffee, the finest flavor from single lot farms all over the world with blends such as Black Phillip, Reanimator, and my personal favorite, Old Scratch. Available at Spring-Heeled Jack Coffee. Check them out. You won't be disappointed. And I know this because I haven't slept in 3 days. Tell them the Curly Mustache Podcast sent you.
So, the other villain that we picked for this podcast is Norman Bates, who was rated as the second greatest villain on the American Film Institute's list of top 100 film heroes and villains, only behind Darth Vader, which is pretty prestigious. If you ask me, like, shit.
Do you notice the theme here, though? Notice the theme between the top two villains? Both of them mama's boys.
Yeah, that's true. I think the only difference is that Darth Vader was totally cool with literally murdering billions of people.
Well, he really needed to get his mom's attention.
So, Norman Bates, of course, he's the main character from the Psycho franchise. He was first written into existence by Robert Bloch in the 1959 novel Psycho. Had 4 movies. The first being directed by Alfred Hitchcock. The 3 following movies are garbage, and we'll get into them, like, a little bit. There's a popular show called Bates Motel, which is getting a lot of traction, and you have the terrible Vince Vaughn remake. And I just want to take a little sidebar about the Vince Vaughn remake real quick. There was a time when me and my wife were at Denny's in Clarksville, Indiana. If anybody ever wants to know where hell is, that is Denny's in Clarksville, Indiana. Just so you guys know. So we're sitting there, we're enjoying our Grand Slam breakfast. There's 2 men sitting in the booth parallel to us, and they're talking about their favorite movies. And one of the men says his 2 favorite movies of all time are Rocky V, which is arguably the worst Rocky movie, and possibly the worst boxing movie of all time.
Wait, are we talking Rocky V where, like, Tommy Gunn and...
Yes.
Where somehow they managed to get... What was the name of the old guy who was his trainer in the first movie?
Burgess Meredith.
They got Burgess Meredith with his raging dementia and Alzheimer's to be in that movie for 30 seconds.
Yes.
And then promptly forgot about it. That's his favorite movie?
Well, that's one of his favorite movies, because his second favorite movie of all time is the Psycho remake with Vince Vaughn.
Jesus Christ. Was he wearing a fucking tap-out shirt or something that was 3 sizes too fucking small?
I don't know, but this guy obviously just loved watching Vince Vaughn masturbate. Because that's really all I remember from that movie.
I wasn't going to say it, but yeah. Listen, Vince Vaughn is a beautiful man. I think we can all come together. His comedic timing is brilliant. but I don't want to see him jerking his gherkin any more than I have to in life. I did not go to the theater to... I went to the theater to see a shot-by-shot remake of Psycho made... And I don't recall that being in fucking... We're done. I can't...
But you know what? We can talk about the original Psycho done by Alfred Hitchcock, which was a phenomenal movie. Really one of the first, and I dare say, horror slasher films. And a lot of people argue with me that Hitchcock wasn't a horror director. He's a thriller director. Blah, 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 blah. You know what, you motherfuckers? Hitchcock took all the things about horror and put them into one movie. And to even the fucking soundtrack. So, just a little sidebar about horror music real quick. If I can go on a tangent here.
I've been doing it the whole fucking show. I think you're owed one.
One of the most impressive things about horror movies is the ability to make people feel uncomfortable with the music. And, you know, one of the famous themes of all time in any movie, let alone horror, is the Jaws theme, which is a minor second, which is, you know, just moving up half a step on the scale. Now, when you want a theme like Psycho, you take the minor second and you play them at the same time, and that creates dissonance, which makes people uncomfortable because their ears don't like it. Your brain does not like hearing dissonant notes. It's why all these fucking southern metalcore bands like Norma Jean and I can't even think of them right now, but that's why there's always like that with like dissonant chords going on. They don't sound good. They're supposed to make you feel uncomfortable and get into the mood to where you want to hurt people. But that theme went on during the most intense parts of Psycho and was every bit a part of Norman Bates' character as his actions, in my opinion.
I agree, 100%. I'm not even going to fight you on this. I have nothing to add to that. That is a good summary. You have broken it down. Well done, sir.
We can't talk about Norman Bates without talking about Anthony Perkins, because Anthony Perkins was a perfect actor to play Norman Bates. And I've read the first Psycho book. I haven't read any of the other Psycho books, but I've read the first one. And after reading the first one and seeing the movies, and I watched the movie as recently as last year, like, they couldn't have done it. Alfred Hitchcock is a fucking genius. That's all I'm going to say. We have to move on.
No, Anthony Perkins brought Norman Bates. Anthony Perkins was... Okay, you and I are going to disagree about the other Psycho movies being garbage, because... 2 and 3 were hot garbage. The fourth one, I love the shit out of the fourth one. Psycho the Beginning, I'm all for that movie. I was down, I loved it. Anthony Perkins in the Psycho movies has the same effect as Morgan Freeman. Name a shitty Morgan Freeman movie, and then remove Morgan Freeman from it. How much shittier is that movie?
Yeah.
Anthony Perkins, name all the Psycho horror movies he was in, remove Anthony Perkins. Those movies are hot fucking trash cinematic abortions.
Okay, so, and that's where we disagree about movies, is because I don't think one actor can save an entire movie. And that's why you like the Resident Evil movies and I don't, which makes me right and you wrong. So go fuck yourself.
That was uncalled for, sir. That hurt my feelings. Let's get back to let's get back to Norman Bates.
The reason that we talked earlier about it being speculated that he was inspired by Ed Gein is because Robert Bloch came out and said that he was almost finished with the writing of Psycho before he even heard about Ed Gein, which I think I'm going to call a little bit of bullshit about, because this dude was writing Psycho while Ed Gein was murdering people and being caught for it literally 35 miles away.
Yeah, I'm calling sheer and utter...
just banana tree.
Bullshit.
This guy was fucking writing about this. I mean, dude... how can you not hear about this shit within 35 miles? Maybe he had an idea.
No, he...
I think all of it was just completely ignorant of one another. And of course, like I said, Robert Bloch was writing this in Wayawega, Wisconsin.
Ah, yes, Wisconsin, the land of the most confusing, insulting to every Native American that lived there named...
Milwaukee.
But let's take a look for if we can get back on point and talk a little bit about Norman here and how he kind of matches up with our boy Eddie.
Yeah, so definitely a similarity between the two is an insanely abusive and severely religious mother that thought all women but her were sinful and prostitutes, essentially. It's literally the exact same situation, except the father I don't think was abusive. But he died early, And then when Norman's mother, Norma, by the way, she was going to remarry this guy named Joe Considine. And Considine was actually the one, and this is told in like further Psycho movies, not the first one, or further Psycho books or something later down the line, that Joe was the one that talked Norman into opening the Bates Motel in Fairville, California. So when he opened that hotel, of course, Norma was going to marry Joe, and Norman got super jealous and murdered them both with basically pesticide and set it up like a murder-suicide.
That's right, Mother. If I can't have your vagina, Joe can't have your vagina either. Yes.
Well, I don't think there was ever any incest in the movies or books, but...
Clearly you didn't watch a Psycho 4 the beginning, because there was the beginning a handy job. There was the beginning of a handy job, and I got the most awkward of boners.
I'm so fucking sorry, Joel, that I didn't watch Psycho 4 the beginning.
Do the fucking research.
I'm not watching I'm not watching it.
Don't come to this fucking table unprepared, sir.
I'm not watching it. I refuse.
Okay.
All right, so while recovering from the shock of his mother's death, he developed dissociative identity disorder and assumed his mother's personality to try and escape the guilt of murdering her. And he kept her corpse in the fruit cellar, all dressed up, liked to talk to it, liked to dress in her clothes, and had belittling conversations with her any time that he felt attracted to a woman. So anytime he popped a boner or was like, ooh, this woman, I really want to talk to her, maybe ask her out. Basically, he became his mother telling him that he was a fucking asshole.
He can hear his mother's voice in the basement in his mind just going, Norman, do you have a boner? Knock that shit off!
If you have a boner! So let's talk about the other horrible shit that Norman Bates did, aside from murdering his mom and his mom's fiance.
Yes, because it's awesome.
That's when Marion Crane comes into the picture. And Marion Crane, of course, was a thief who stole money from her job and decided to stay at the Bates Motel, where she met Norman and he became insanely attracted to her. And that's where you get the entire shower scene from the first Psycho movie, where Norman is peeping on her while she's taking a shower and becomes attracted. And then Mother decides to take over, and that's when he murders the shit out of Marion Crane by stabbing her in the shower. And he basically blacks out, but, you know, normally I'm, like, a little bit sentimental to mental illness, but he did black out when this happened, but when he woke up, he realized what he did, and then he tried to cover it up. And that's what tells me that he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah, you're still, even if Mother goes, Norman, do you have a boner? Let Mother take over and take care of the filthy whore. Yes, Scottish, don't go there.
I'm tired of this.
The fact is, yeah, you're right, because it's the same as with Ed Gein, that there was, Ed said that he blacked out. He would enter a fugue state and had no idea what would happen. But part of what would have convicted him was that he afterwards knew what he had done wrong and still proceeded to attempt to hide his crimes. So yet another correlation between Ed and Norman. Yeah,
which is, again, why I think it's bullshit that Robert Block says that he's not any way inspired by him.
Robert Block got... I'm going to let Robert Block say whatever he wants, because he got fucked over by the movie studio and by Alfred Hitchcock himself. They fucked him.
Hitchcock wasn't really known as being a nice guy, so...
No.
No. All right, so after he covered up the murder, he also kills Milton Arbogast, who was a private detective that was looking for Marion. So right there, we know that Norman Bates has killed four people. I think he went on to kill like two more people in the following sequels. So a total, we'll give him six people. That's, you know, he murdered six people. But the sequels just get more and more convoluted. As Joel was saying, two and three are just like, what the fuck? And then four is a prequel to the first movie, which still has Anthony Perkins in it toward the middle to end, but a younger version of him in the beginning to middle, right?
It's Anthony Perkins telling the story of Norman to a late night radio. Wolfie Alfred, that's the actress's name. Alfred Wolfie. Well, look her up. He calls into a late night radio call, shock jock. We're talking about matricide tonight, which, you know, always brings the fucking ratings in.
Yeah, of course.
But then here comes Norman just on there, being like, I killed my mother. And he goes through and tells a story about his mom almost gave him a handy and then threatened to cut his pee-pee off with scissors.
You know, all the normal shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, they also retconned his father's death in one of the movies, too. I think in, like, 2 or 3. I'm sorry, not his father. The fiancé, Joe. They talk about how he murdered him in a previous movie, but in the 4th one, I think they talk about that he was killed by bees or some stupid shit.
Not the bees! My eyes! Not the bees!
Right. So back to the main storyline of Psycho. Marion's sister, Lila, and her boyfriend, Sam, come looking for her, and they discover Norman dressing up like Norma when he tries to kill them, basically. Or when she tries to kill them, I guess. But they are able to overpower him, and he's arrested and declared insane, apparently, on the spot, since they could do that then, I guess. Well, this guy's nutty. Can't fuck with him.
That, to me, in the book and in the movie, was an incredibly, I think, for me, being really young when I read that book and saw that movie, that was one of those very powerful cinematic moments that goes to show just how good Anthony Perkins was as an actor and how incredibly underappreciated he was as an actor, because you see a guy dressed up as his mom killing people, it's gonna make you laugh, but Anthony Perkins, right, sold the audience the soul of Norman Bates, and it goes so well with the book. But go on. I'm sorry. I could go on for hours about...
No, it's great. But I do, real quick, want to take a look at my favorite Anthony Perkins, Norman Bates representation. And that is when Anthony Perkins decided in 1990 to reprise his role as Norman Bates for none other than a Oatmeal Crisps and Oatmeal Raisin Crisps commercial in which his mother is telling him to eat his breakfast, and it is fantastic. And I just want to let you know that I'm going to now play that for you all to hear.
I always do what mother tells me, but I never could eat oatmeal until I found Oatmeal Raisin Crisp. Now this is oatmeal made my way. Crispy flakes with oatmeal, a bit of brown sugar, and loaded with raisins and almonds. Oatmeal Raisin Crisp. It's scary how good it tastes.
Oatmeal Crisp, Oatmeal Raisin Crisp.
Look, Mother, I'm eating my oatmeal.
Now that's a good boy.
Yeah, so that fucking video is ridiculous. Like, that commercial is amazing.
I love everything about it. It's sad knowing why he did it. Because I was shocked. I didn't know this, but, you know, he was trying to get treatment for HIV at the time. So that's the only reason he did it. And yet he still managed to fucking sell it.
He needed that money.
That's a fucking professional right there. You're dying. You don't want to do it, but you still bring the fucking magic.
So, yeah, that's our spiel on Norman Bates. So I guess we got to bring up the bowler scale, right?
Bowler scale.
Right. So how many bowler hats does Ed Gein get?
Ed Gein, on a scale of being a serial killer, Ed, unfortunately, is only going to get 3 bowler hats. If we were doing the bowler hat just based solely upon kills, Ed would only get 3 because just a lack of creativity in his kills. Now, if we're talking about the sheer drive and determination and the artistic vision that this man had to make nipple belts, Ed Gein on the villain scale is going to get a good 8.5 bowler hats. Ed okay. Gein, for creativity alone, gets an 8.5.
I'm going to agree wholeheartedly with you there, because I was literally reading through the research and just like, what the fuck? What the fuck? Like, I had to sit... When I was reading through that list for the first time, I had to sit there and just think about it. And, like, really process that. Like, I had known the general background of Ed Gein, but never the specifics of, like, the lips around the drawstring and the nipple belt and, like, fucking skulls on the bedposts and stuff. Like, that stuff really, I mean, it's disturbing. It's really fucked up. And once again, the second week in a row where I'm learning more about shit that I never wanted to learn about, but here we are, and I guess that's fine. I'll just have nightmares for the rest of my life, but whatever. We're entertaining people, I guess, maybe.
Hey, it was your idea to include me as co-host, okay? I'm gonna make the choices, and I'm gonna bring some fucked up shit to the table.
That's fine. I'm just gonna forewarn you that on our 100th episode, I'm just gonna murder you on the air.
As an actor.
You're not an actor.
As an artist.
Neither. You're not that either.
I can think of no greater performance for which the light of my life to shuffle off this world.
Okay.
I'm all for it.
Well, just so you know, I'm going to drink out of your head, so. And then fuck it.
I am so hard.
Let's talk about Norman Bates.
No, let's talk about you fucking my head when I'm dead. I'm super close.
I don't want to talk about that anymore.
Please don't edit this.
Let's talk about Norman Bates. Where does he belong on the bowler hat scale?
Norman Bates, I'm going to have to put him underneath Ed. As iconic as the character is and as weird as he is, Norman, unfortunately, is only going to get 6 bowler hats from me.
Yeah, that's a little strange. I mean, I guess the grossness kind of weighs a lot for you because Norman Bates killed 4 more people.
Norman Bates was one of those... Yes, it was a shock ending at the end of the book in the movie, right? But at the same time, he's very low-key.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me put it this way. Ed Gein, Norman Bates is Jack Nicholson's version of the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ed Gein is Heath Ledger's version of the Joker. So... as much kooky shit as Norman did, he just pales in comparison.
Yeah, I can see that. And another thing we have to look at is that throughout the fucking shitty sequels, they're canon, so we have to give him credit, is that he is actively trying to get his mother out of his head. I think by the 4th movie, he's like, he basically like saves somebody and like tries to set himself on fire to get rid of his mother's persona. Or whatever.
Yep. He tries to kill himself, ends up burning the hotel down around him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the movie ends with him just looking at the camera being like, it's all over now. Mother is gone. So that's fucking creepy.
But she's fucking not, as we see in the Quaker's Oatmeal Crisp cereal commercial. She is alive and well. So, yeah, I agree with you. Maybe, like, around 6.5. You know, he's just not as creepy, but he is definitely murdery. So, with that being said, why don't we get to the bit of listener feedback that we have from our first episode?
I am shocked. I am amazed. I am humbled. I am in love with each and every one of you beautiful bastards. The fact that the outpouring we get, we're not even on iTunes yet.
Yeah, I know. It should be up by the time this episode comes out, but iTunes takes forever with the submission, so.
Yeah, so I just want to say thank you all so much.
Yeah, and I've got a few more pieces than we have here, but we'll save them. And we've got about 5 pieces here. So, Joel, do you want to start with the feedback from our good friend Cheats, who really loves you, by the way? You guys have a nice back and forth all the time on MPM. So, what did Cheats have to say?
Cheats, that little mushroom-shaped, bruised bastard. He said, I never ever want to hear Joel say, let me suck on some toes in a bad British accent ever again.
Well, to that I say, you don't have to, Cheats, because I will never let another episode go out with Joel saying that specific line in a bad British accent.
Cheats, let me suck on your toes.
Except for then. I'm going to let that go.
Thank you. Ryan Veerling wrote, it was so good, I listened to it twice. Ryan, I know it's been a while since we've seen each other. We work together making drugs for the pharmaceutical industry. And I want to say you're a beautiful bastard. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. I, too, appreciate the fact that we at least were not shitty enough for you to listen to twice in a row. That's pretty awesome. I've got a piece from a good friend, Kinsey. She said, great first episode. It kept me interested and laughing. I almost overcooked my lunch because I was so into the theories about Jack. And she went on to ask, what if Jack worked for the Daily Mail, like Spider-Man, and sold his own stories and wrote his own letters to the press? He was maybe a crazy narcissist whose mother was a prostitute, so he sought them out, and turns out they were cunts, so he mutilated them.
I can only imagine, like, the editor of the Daily Mail being like J. Jonah Jameson. God damn it, Jack! Bring me pictures!
Damn it, Jack! Bring me pictures of Jack! Wait a minute.
Jack, bring me pictures of the Ripper! God damn it!
Yeah, so glad you loved it, Kinsey. That's great to hear.
Thank you, Kinsey. Thank you.
My buddy Sean, co-host of Nerdonomy and host of The Whiskey Reel, he sent me a text today and said, I asked him how he liked it. He said it was awesome and hilarious. And he also praised me and said I worked magic with the sound. And that would be because my astute co-host, Joel Mingle, forgot his fucking headphones last week. So the editing was a real son of a bitch. Therefore, I really appreciate you, Sean, for saying that I worked magic, because I had a really difficult time with making it sound good. And, yeah, so thanks.
Hold on just one second. Yeah, how it's my fault. How many times did we record episode one?
Hey, but you know what? The funny thing about that is that you didn't have headphones for either fucking time we re-recorded, you son of a bitch.
I got plenty to say. I didn't lose a whole fucking podcast gold.
Yeah, hush it. Hush it. All right, and our last piece of feedback for the day is from a good friend and another co-host of Motion Picture Meltdown, D. Hart, who texted me and said that Joel is surprisingly into murder, in which I told him I felt like when I was editing it, it sounded like you were salivating while talking about murder.
I was having a great fucking time talking about murder.
You were drooling a little bit, and he responded and said, I could almost hear it. There was definitely some bloodlust in his tone.
Well, honestly, the reason is I get real excited. I love talking about true crime. And D-Hart, thank you very, very much. That's very kind of you. And let me suck on your toes.
Stop threatening to suck on co-host's toes from Motion Picture Meltdown.
I can't help it.
All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap this up. I just want to say thanks again for taking the time to listen to us pretend that we know what the fuck we're talking about. I want to take this opportunity to plug some other podcasts that we have here at United Cypher. You can check out my other podcast, Motion Picture Meltdown. Check out Music Video Countdown. Both of these have current episodes running. You can also listen to old episodes of Talks Over Games, The Fallout Forecast, and The Anime Alphabet. Give a listen to some other podcasts that we love, like Nerdonomy, Sean's podcast, The Whiskey Reel, a different Sean's podcast, Sean vs. Wild, and Code Yellow, a Scare Actors podcast, and that is Jared Howell from Return of the Living podcast. And with that being said, I'm Steven.
I'm Joel, skin of vagina mingle.
And make sure you stay evil.